Welcome to our new bonus series, what we like to call Fuel Behind the Scenes. This takes you behind the scenes when we're discussing different topics, subject matter, and videos and podcasts we want to film for you, the audience, here inside of Fuel.
All right, so I started to look at targeting. Mark did, I don't remember if you remember Mark's video from Immersion Dispersion way back when we first kicked off Fuel, where he actually used his approach calculator kind of saying where you should target, optimal targeting and all this. So what I was thinking is to build off of that. So as I started to kind of start putting ideas to paper, I was like, all right, if you were going to target something, you know, what makes up targeting? It's more than just hitting at the pin, and it's more than just stay away from this condition because you're going to lose a percentage of a shot, you know, possibly. So I was starting to jot this down, and I was thinking there's where the ball is, you know, we're talking approach shots here for, right? So targeting with approaches. So we got distance to the pin, lie of the ball, yeah, distance to the trouble that's around the green, shot shape. Does it match the actual shot shape that the player can do? And so I started to go down the spiral, and I said, well, okay, let's stop the ball. Let's just look around the green. And the same things were starting to come up. Where's the trouble? Where's the pin? What's the shot shape? Can you feed that shot shape into that pin? Can you feed that shot shape around the environmental conditions leading into that? You know, throwing in wind. Okay, fine. There's those components for targeting as well. And then you have the player. What is the player capable of? You know, what are their dispersion rates? You know, do they have a stock shot? Can they shape it? Can they move it? How consistent can they move it? And then even more so, what are their opportunities once they hit a green or miss a green? You know, so in my head, I was like, okay, this is a great topic, but I'm not going to be able to do this in one episode.
No, well, okay. So I guess what you could cover in one episode is just the concept of environmental awareness.
You're right.
So, and that would be a good little lead in to what comes next, because even going to what you've just said to me, you know, location trouble, player shot shape match, blah blah blah, but also players short game capability. So if they miss it, even though they like the shot in the wrong spot, they mightn't have the requisite short game shot to recover it.
Yeah.
I mean, this one sounds pretty endless in terms of how deep we could go into it.
Yeah, that's why I was starting this path, and I was like, So now I'm going to have to break this thing up. And then I wanted to do this live Monday. And then I'm starting to think, well, if I go live, it's going to be a very short, minute piece. And then when is the next time I'm going to be able to go live to finish this out? So this could be a multiple month project. So yeah. I might shelve this for, this might be a series in itself is what I'm basically saying, is I might even kick this out maybe as a summer series of, let's lay this out over 4 or 5 days, go live 5 days in a row or something like that. But definitely more than what my initial intentions were when I was thinking about trying to get this ready for Monday. So I had a thought. I was thinking, I've been breaking down all the tour players. Mark's been, you know, sending, and I've gone from a very wide view to basically what are they doing different to win on tour? What does it take to win on tour, and how is it different? And the funny part is, to win on tour really matches high-end amateurs. They just do things a lot better. I use the word different, and I don't like that, because they don't do things different per se, but they do it a hell of a lot better. So so let's just, you know, just to give you kind of the concept of how I want to maybe change some of that verbiage and stuff I've produced in the past, is if we look at John Rahm, he's won all kind of stuff. I know he won the Genesis, right? So, you know, basically this is what he did, right? John Rahm won the Genesis. But if you go through the numbers and you start looking through it, you know, his in position, like his ball striking was good, pretty, you know, we could even benchmark him to himself. So let's just look at John Rahm over, you know, a larger period of time. And you can kind of see, he went on such a crazy stretch for, that might be a bad example. He went on such a crazy, let's do him over a year because he was on such a crazy hot streak there for, let's just do the whole, so it start, season starts in September. And then it goes, and we'll just call it through whatever today is, March 16th. So it's still pretty good. But what you can see is that when he won the tournament, it wasn't like he did things way beyond what he normally does. Now, on occasions, they'll do things, but he just does it a heck of a lot better. So you look at his conversion rates, you know, 88% BIP. You look at his putting inside of.
Did you just say 88% BIP?
Yeah. If you want to win on tour, it's insane. Their birdie conversion rate on tour is absolutely insane. So if you just look from 9 to 20, you know, he in this tournament, he was 33, but over this season, he's averaging 44%. So he actually putted worse from 9 to 20 feet, but he still made, you know, 4.25 birdies. So again, I think what's interesting is to win on tour. And I use this all the time for even if you look at like the PGA Tour shot tracer or whatever, and you watch them and you put everybody in the field and say, how did they play the hole? Nobody plays it different, if that makes sense. Like, you know, if it's a dog leg, whatever, everybody's usually on the same side of the fairway. Now their ability to hit a certain distance is different, but, you know, everybody plays it kind of a certain side and they all hit to the certain part of the green and they all. So it's really not that John Rahm is playing it different. He's not taking it down the left side when everyone's taking it down the right side. So by different,
the tactics.
Yeah. So the tactics are relatively similar. And if you go look at any shot tracer, but what the winner really does, it's just different. I mean, it is just better. Like conversion rates through the roof. So let's even do like, who is it? Scottie Scheffler. Let's look at Kirk. Kirk won the Arnold Palmer. And I know, so let's go to the Arnold Palmer. And then I know Scottie Scheffler was in the field. So let's put Scottie next to him. So Scottie wins the following week, doesn't win this week at the Arnold Palmer, but wins the next week at the TPC. So again, what we can see, Scottie Scheffler, let me put this, make sure I get the dates right here. March, Scottie Scheffler's having another really good year. March 2. The five. All right. So Scheffler is the gray line. And you can see that Kirk wins the tournament and he's kind of the colored line, right? So yes. Yeah, so what did Kirk do different than Scottie in this tournament? And Scottie had a good event. So again, they made the same amount of birdies, but and what you can actually see is Scheffler just made more bogey, right? So where did Kirk do better? He just did better at avoiding bogey. And was that a ball striking component? Actually, no, because Scheffler had 11 greens. He only had 10, right? So, you know, so again, it wasn't the fact that Kirk just outperformed Scottie. It was just the fact that Kirk did a lot of things, like his in position conversion rate was 64%, and Scheffler was right around tour average at 27%. So he was making twice as many birdies from 9 to 20 as Scottie Scheffler did. And then if you look at the BIP rates, 92% to win. And Scottie Scheffler was at 53%. So it's, again, it wasn't like Scottie was down in it. He actually had more greens. He had more opportunities. It's just Kirk out just putted his tail off. So I think what could be a really fascinating discussion on Monday would be to win, you just got to be better. It's really what it is. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think to win it, you have to be better, but it's not sustainable bar freak. So you're not going to retain that level of performance week in, week out. And this is why when we see players go on a 3 and 5 tournament winning streak, that is genuinely outlandish versus normal. But Tiger has made it all feel like it's kind of normal.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And think of John Rahm, right? For a month and a half, the dude couldn't miss. Then he goes... Was it the Arnold Palmer? He shoots 7 under in the first round. Looks like he's going to run away with it. And then shoots the next 3 rounds over par. Like, where did he hadn't seen over par basically all season. Then all of a sudden, you know, you're thinking, oh my God, it's going to be a Tiger Woods season. And now you're going, oh, now you're starting to look like a Inter-X pro, you know, which is fascinating.
I mean, he's still lined up for a better than Tiger season, potentially, if he gets a couple of majors under his belt. And lots of people I talk to, normal human beings who can't play golf at that level, kind of enjoy seeing John Rahm hit an odd ball in the water and look at the caddy and look at the club and go, what just happened here?
No,
thank God he doesn't. You know, it's not Sam Patrick we're watching playing golf, it's John Rahm.
No, I agree with that. That's why everybody loves the U.S. Open, right? It's a humbler.
Yeah, and that's why this distance debate is bollocks. You know, we want to feel like we're playing the same game as the professionals, but you don't remotely play the same game as a professional.
I don't know what the heck they're doing. I think, the USGA is doing what the USGA does. Just likes to they come out all bold, but they usually back away. Yeah, I'd be like,
I'd say that was their ultimate line in the sand that's been announced.
Yeah, well, you know.
And then correct. Then I'll put it in reverse here and go, beep, beep. We didn't really mean that. Don't sue us for billions of dollars.
Yeah, we just said it was an idea.
Yeah.
It was a trial balloon. We were floating it out there. But no, like I said, I don't know. To me, I think it's just interesting. And again, we could even show some college data where the college player wins. And I'm pretty sure we have some LPGA data. All to win, everything is extremely good. Like you typically don't see, you know, so again, if we just go through the winners. So if I just go winners on tour, and the beauty of this is, I believe this is winners on tour is actually a benchmark inside of Gameforge. So anybody can actually go through, look at each individual tournament. We don't put the name, but we put the winner for each week. And again, if you kind of just start at the very start of the season, which was the Fortnite, or I don't even remember what it was. There's so many of them now. 23 was the 22, 23. So again, if we just start trekking through and just what you really kind of learn as you're going through the list is you just watch everything so far to the left. I mean, just, you know, those are not typical GFIs. So again, if you took that to the average.
So here's my question, Brian. Have you guys worked out on average how far above the average are you across different statistics? Have you guys got that yet?
We haven't run that, but we certainly could by Monday.
I think that would be really interesting to say. On average, they will be X, Y, Z. And then is there averages within those averages where you go, okay, this becomes a little bit more predictable because they will be 30% ahead on bips, but only 2% ahead on something else, right?
Yeah, well we typically
see. And then we start gambling on golf.
And well, degenerate gamblers, that's my life dream. What we typically see is the winner on tour is usually 4 to 4.5 shots under par per day is kind of what we see. Yeah. So to create 4.5 birdies, right, on average, you know, or be 4.5 under. So we've got to find 5.5 to 6.5 birdies because usually we average anywhere, you know, most of them when they win, it's usually between 1 and 2 bogeys. Now it can change, like, you know, like the Arnold Palmer, it's a little more challenging. So some courses are more challenging and they keep scores low. And then you have some that are like, what was it? The Century Tournament of Champion, you know, John Rahm wins at, you know, 28 under par or some 27 under par. So just a free for all. Right. So basically if you look, but again, he still makes one bogey, but he was producing 7 birdies per round. So I think what we're going to start to see is the offense gets really, really elevated and they do a good job of really keeping defense to a minimum. They typically don't ever double, maybe one per tournament where they lose a little bit, but majority never get themselves in trouble by a bad swing, bad decision to make double. And what you really see is the offense goes through the roof. Now, how that happens, sometimes it's in positions move. Like they, like here, you know, he's averaging 8.5 in position where he's typically 7.5. So he's, you know, giving himself 4 more birdie putts per tournament. or it could be, again, that they're putting, like I said, 44% from 9 to 20, or, you know, a BIP rate of 93%. So anybody that's listening to this, the BIP rate is birdies divided by in position. So basically, he's birdying 93% of the time when he's 20 feet in for this tournament, which tour average is about 60. So you're looking at about a 30% improvement to win inside of this event. And I think the other really cool part is if you look at par five scoring, they eat par fives lunch or short par fours. And again, we can go through any of them. They all, even this week, look at the players, like Scottie Scheffler averaged 2.75 under, goes for it over four times. So that means he's going after par fours too. So there's some short par fours he was going after as well. So that, so to me, the concept is, you know, you're always going to make bogey. It's there. You don't play 4 days without making bogeys. They're going to show up. But the key is we've got to figure out how to get to four and a half under each day. So if we're going to make a bogey to two, that means we got to make 4.5 to 6.5 birdies per day. Then the question is how do we do that? And how do they do it to win? And again, it's some tournaments vary, but again, it's usually not one piece. Now, sometimes there is. There's certain events where the player just, you know, has 10 in positions or 11 in positions, something nuts by ball striking wise. And then maybe the not quite there. I think if I remember, Adam Scott won the Genesis. Was that last year? I think it was last year. Where was it? Or was that Riviera? I have to go back and look. It might have been Riviera, but he did it. But he did it with really bad short putting. Go figure. Adam Scott went in a tournament with not great short putting. But where he was spectacular, it was the fact that he was really good at he made a lot of putts at distance.
Let me pose a different challenge for you. Mm-hmm. You guys, you wear glasses and look at numbers a lot of the time, right? I like to empty glasses and not look at numbers a lot of the time. if you were to take the stalwarts of this season so far, so John Rahm and obviously Scotty, okay, what they do to win golf tournaments versus the outlier that would have been Adam Scott in that one, I'm certain there's going to be patterns there, right? And their patterns will be much more predictable than a Scotty having a week or somebody else having a week. But those guys who are consistently up there are able to do the different stuff actually and repeat it maybe way more often.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, so like I said, I think what we could do is say, you know, John Rahm versus the field. It could even be that interesting. Like what John Rahm is doing right now compared to everybody else. And I'd like to go back. I think it would be a really fascinating one would be John Rahm versus Tiger. When Tiger was at his rip-roaring best, we have the data. We just have to pull it in. I think that could be a fascinating, like, especially if Rahm, you know, kind of bounces
even back. Multiple winners recently, right? So put John Rahm, Scotty, and throw Rory in, who the European Tour or the DP Tour, World Tour win.
Yeah. And just Max Homa's gotten a couple wins in a row or kind of.
Yeah. So players are showing certain trends and go, yes, it's different, but is it actually similar when they are winning whatever events are winning?
No, I like that. So I think what we could do is say, hey, here's what the offenses normally look like. Here's the delta change normal. And then we could really say this year so far, Scheffler's won, what, two events or two or three?
I'm figuring he's two, home is two, and Rahm's three.
Three, yeah. So we could look at
that's good to stack up.
Yeah, we could say, what are these three doing? And then as a head-to-head matchup, as we get closer to – is the Ryder Cup this year? The Ryder Cup is this year.
What's the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, I don't know.
It only happens when we're defending it.
So I think as a – that's right. So I think what we could say is we got two Americans coming after John Rahm. Now, Scheffler did beat the hell out of him, you know, a couple years ago. But anyway, we won't talk about that because no one knew who Scottie Scheffler was at the time. That was his ascent. But I think it'd be fascinating, too, kind of starting to look Ryder Cup-wise. Like, these are two of the Americans that are going to be coming after Rahm. You know, how are they?
There's a really cool series in and of itself whereby – as the teams look to be, you know, more solidified, predicting who should play who and what the outcomes would be.
Oh, we already do that.
Yeah, but let's do it better.
I think that would be,
you just go America, we're gonna
we actually predicted the last time that we did predict the America in the President's Cup, but whatever, because that was just an awful event. But the last Ryder Cup, we actually predicted almost to a T individually who won and what that would look like. And then I know the Ryder Cup before that, we actually had Europe beating the shit out of the U.S. And
we're going to need to mute what I'm about to say next. We need to start gambling on golf, dude. I don't like gambling. But if you got these prediction models,
we do. I mean, our secret.
If fuel's not going to make us wealthy, let's do it a different way.
No, I kind of think of that. And yes, I agree with you.
Good.
But no, I like the idea of saying, hey, here are the multiple winners for this year. You know, this is what the winners look like when they win. This is what the average field looks like. Here's the change. But these three have just done it even. They're multiple winners, so they're doing it in a different time period. And I think another interesting one, it won't be this week, but I think we could do too, is show when a player wins on tour, the following week, they're usually crap.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, you can kind of speak on some of that, but, you know, their whole world gets thrown upside down. You know, they have media appearances, they don't get a train or whatever. But I think it's always fascinating that you don't tend to see back-to-back winners very often. And after you win, it actually can be multiple tournaments before everything's rolling to get you back to where you need to be.
Sure. And if you win a major, sometimes you disappear for years, your career's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really, you know, there's been a couple of those guys that have careered it and then just, you know, their world changed and then they just went away.
Chesney Hawks, man, the one and only.
Yeah. I think you could even go David Duval after he won the British. I think.
The what?
When he won the British Open, Duval.
The what? The Open Championship.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
But, oh, we need that moment on camera.
What? I think the British Open.
The what?
the British Open.
Ian Baker Finch, same thing.
Yeah.
Open Championship.
Well, I heard a story. I don't know if it's true, but like Duval, when he won or whatever, was like looking at the trophy and was like, I've put all these years into this and this is it.
Yeah.
Like an existential crisis.
Yeah.
This is not what I thought it was going to be.
Because so, it can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Any thoughts or anything going on with you?
No, I think we're in a good place. I think.
This has been a Fuel production.